This Texas Matters podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, gerrymandering in Texas, how bad is it, and could the state see meaningful reform in redistricting? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. At a Starbucks in West Austin, Josh LaFaire sets up a board game that he and his siblings invented.
This game, there's a lot of scheming, there's a lot of strategizing, and there's a lot of backstabbing.
It's called Mapmaker, and there's nothing homemade about it. It resembles any other high-end board game, but this one does have cute little tokens for the major political parties: red elephant, blue donkey, green leaf, and a yellow porcupine. That's the symbol for the Libertarians.
So basically how to play is each player is a political party, and players go around separating voters into districts. And whoever has the most districts at the end of the game wins.
Mapmaker is about the process of drawing political maps, and when it's done unfairly in favor of one political party, it's called gerrymandering, which is something LaFaire says he knows about because it's impacting his life.
So my brother, sister, and I grew up in a gerrymandered district in Austin, Texas, District 10, and we wanted to invent a board game because we wanted to start conversations around the country about an issue that isn't discussed enough.
LaFaire is a high school senior and has yet to vote in an election, but still, he noticed that the political maps in Travis County seemed unfair.
We wanted this game to be about gerrymandering because we were from Austin, Texas, which is very gerrymandered. It is split into six separate congressional districts.
The LaFaires created the game and then went online to Kickstarter for financial support.
Like, it was incredible. We were overwhelmed by the support. And to our amazement, we had 1,468 teachers, anti-gerrymandering advocates. Arnold Schwarzenegger was our biggest supporter, and his work in the anti-gerrymandering movement has been absolutely incredible.
With over $60,000 raised online, the LaFaires manufactured the game and then delivered 80 copies to the U.S. Supreme Court. The nation's high court historically is reluctant to wade into the political thicket and decide what maps are fair, except when there is overwhelming evidence of racial discrimination. The justices would rather see a political solution to political problems. LaFaire says he hopes his game can help educate the public about what's going on and how to fix it.
Nobody is really talking about gerrymandering. They're not talking about how our politicians are actually influencing these elections by how they're drawing these lines. That's why we wanted to create this game.
During the 2018 midterm elections, there was a political shakeup. A blue wave did hit the state, fueled by discontent with Republican President Donald Trump and strong voter turnout for Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate Beto O'Rourke. But how big of a blue wave was it depends on your perspective. There were many races that were tougher than normal for Republican incumbents, but like O'Rourke, most Democratic candidates fell short of victory. However, two Texas congressional seats did flip red to blue, and that helped Democrats take control of the U.S. House of Representatives. And in the Texas House, Democrats picked up a dozen seats, bringing the party to 67 seats out of 150, still in the minority, but at a level they hadn't seen in a decade. But the question is, how well do these outcomes actually reflect what voters want for their representation? Are the maps out of whack? Looking at the voting share for Texans overall in the midterms, all votes cast in the election for the congressional candidates, Republicans got 53% of those votes, Democrats got 47%. So if the 37 Texas congressional seats were divided with that proportion, then there would be 19 Republican members of Congress from Texas and 17 Democrats. But what we have is 23 Republicans and 13 Democrats. One could argue that the way the district lines were drawn in Texas is gifting Republicans 4 additional seats in Congress. It should be pointed out, though, that Texas itself, the state, is not gerrymandered. And in 2018, for the 20th year in a row, Republicans swept every statewide election in Texas. Despite all the hoopla, Democrat O'Rourke lost to incumbent Senator Ted Cruz, but with a margin of just 3 points. And several statewide races that Republicans typically enjoy runaway victories were elected by mere single digits. It does look like Texas is shifting, and with redistricting coming up in Texas after the 2020 election, some are hoping for meaningful reform in the legislature to the political map-making process. Last week, the Texas House Redistricting Committee met to discuss bills that propose reforms to the map-making process that would take that power out of the hands of politicians. Representative Donna Howard, an Austin Democrat, is pushing for redistricting reform and has filed House Joint Resolution 25 and House Bill 312, which would reform the map-making process in Texas.
The city of Austin actually has part of our population in an adjoining county of Williamson. So if you look at the city of Austin and Travis County as a whole, we have 6 congressional reps. There is not a single district that has more than 25% of the Austin population. So 6 different congressional representatives, 5 of whom are Republican, 1 Democrat, representing the city of Austin and Travis County.
Wow, what a curious thing. How could something like that happen?
Well, purposefully, I believe, which is what we're talking about with the game that these young people created, gerrymandering. You know, we've had for a long while the fox guarding the hen house here, and legislative bodies drawing the maps for congressional districts as well as for our own districts in the state house and Senate. And whichever party's been in power basically has used this situation to draw lines that protect incumbents, that ensure that certain people can be elected, that pack districts with the party in power. And so that's been a traditional thing that's been done. There have been some of us that have been working on trying to have independent redistricting bodies for quite a while, including, I have to say, from the San Antonio area, former Senator Jeff Wentworth, who was working on this for years. And the idea being that we need to take this out of the hands of the politicians as much as possible, recognizing that it's a political process. It's going to have some politics attached to it, but it needs to be about the voters being able to select their representatives rather than the politicians selecting their voters.
So Senator Jeff Wentworth was in Austin at the time when the Democrats had the majority and they were in power and they were doing gerrymandering. And he was telling them at the time, you need to fix this now because when the Republicans take over, you're going to feel the wrath of what you've been doing to them for all of these years. You're now going to be on the other end of the boot. Now the arc continues and the pendulum swings. And we're at a point now where some are predicting that the Democrats could be back on the in power, maybe, election cycle, who know when. Some are warning the Republicans, you need to fix this now or you're going to have to be back in the position of receiving.
Absolutely. And one would think that eventually that message would sink in. But right now, we at least had a hearing last session and sessions before. There have been redistricting bills that have not even had hearings. So at least this time, Chairman Phil King had a hearing recently where my bill as well as some other reps' bills were heard, creating some form or another of an independent redistricting body. My understanding from what was said that day, though, is there's not a lot of anticipation that there's going to be any subsequent hearings, which would lead one to believe that there's not going to be any action taken. The fact is that when the next legislative body comes back in 2021, based on the 2020 census, that's when the lines will be drawn. If we don't make a decision now about having an independent redistricting body, then we're going to be playing the same game in 2021.
So you had the hearings, and at the end of the hearings, the chairman says, we'll leave this pending.
Yes.
Okay, but there was never any intention of ever reconvening the committee to do anything with those bills that are being left hanging in the air.
I can't say for sure, but I can say that in the preliminary comments of that hearing, where they were discussing where they might hold hearings during the interim to hear from the community about redistricting lines, it was indicated then that this may be their only meeting.
So talk real quickly about that, those hearings that are going to be going around Texas. Is this an opportunity for Texans to express their dissatisfaction?
Absolutely. There probably will be some efforts for people to draw different maps that will be discussed, but really it is an opportunity for Texans to come and tell their legislators what they expect to have happen with the drawing of the lines. But quite frankly, without an opportunity for the legislature to meet again and create some kind of an independent redistricting body, it's hard to imagine that when the legislature reconvenes in 2021 that they will take action at that time to do so. And quite frankly, I believe it requires a constitutional amendment, so it would be too late anyway. Yes, I think people should definitely still absolutely show up at any of these hearings that are going to be happening in the interim. I don't know how we're going to be able to move forward if we don't take action this session, but there's some great strategic minds out there that can help us figure something out, I think, and we'll try to do what we can. But this is really such a dire situation in terms of making sure that people have the appropriate representation that they should have and that they deserve to have from their representatives. And, you know, to me, it's if a party wants to win more seats, then they should win more seats by gaining votes through their message of what their policies are, rather than by virtually stuffing the ballot box by drawing lines that give them the votes they need.
Right now, the state legislature proportionment lines up actually with the vote share that they received in the last midterm elections. Some people are saying, well, look, we don't need gerrymandering because, look, yeah, look how good it works out. It's perfect. It syncs up.
You know what? There is something to be said for shifting population, and that's what this is all about and why we look at the census again. Quite frankly, I'm sure that part of the concern among some is that we have a growing population in our urban centers and fewer in our rural areas, which is we are required by the Constitution to base these lines on population with very little difference between the different districts. They're both supposed to be fairly equal in their representation of the population. You can say that we had a fairly good turnout this last time that gave a more accurate reflection and representation. Certainly that had to do with voter turnout, which is, of course, a factor here too, and a growing discontent with what has happening on the federal level, which also affected the midterms of 2010. You had a lot of seats that flipped this last time in supposedly more Republican districts that, as the population has grown, has been moderated by more people coming in that have a wider viewpoint of looking at things. So I see what you're saying. I think there's some validity to that. But at the same time, we don't have our lines drawn currently to meet what the census is going to show us in 2020, and we must do that.
Right. So we have maps now that are 8 years old. It's kind of like milk in the refrigerator with the expiration dates coming up, and it's starting to have that funk to it. We've got to, you know, we want some fresh maps that are going to reflect what actually, Texans are all about.
We have so many jurisdictions in some of our communities where you've got your municipal lines and your county lines and your school districts and your community college districts and your hospital districts, and the list goes on, and voters have oftentimes a lot of confusion about which districts they're in, because a lot of these lines do not they don't coincide with one another. So you have, again, with the gerrymandering as part of this, you have like these young people discovered that made the gerrymandering game, that they have neighbors fairly close to them who are represented by several different congressional districts, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't keep communities of interest together. It's part of what a lot of people believe results in the apathy at the voting booth, because people don't think their votes actually matter.
So Republicans in power, are they just not aware that there is a pendulum swing in Texas, or do they think that they can hold back the tide with items like voting list purges and other ways of trying to limit the vote, and so they're not concerned about losing the control and being hit with gerrymandering on the other side?
Well, obviously, I can't really speak for what they are thinking and what they're doing here, but you know, the fact that they had a hearing, I think, recognizes at least that there is a potential issue here. There are clearly efforts that I would suggest are aimed at voter suppression to try to maintain the status quo, and perhaps that is the strategy. But you know, I think the writing is clearly on the wall that things are changing, the demographics are changing.
Donna Howard is a Democrat in the Texas House of Representatives, representing the 48th District, which is in Austin. She is advocating for redistricting reform and has filed House Joint Resolution 25 and House Bill 312, which would change the political map-making process in Texas and could end the practice of gerrymandering in the state. Howard's bills and other bills that also seek to reform redistricting were left pending. That means they got a committee hearing, but no vote was taken. Essentially, they were left in legislative limbo. While redistricting reform languishes in Texas and other states, it's moving forward. Michael Lee serves as the senior counsel for the Brenham Center's Democracy Program, where his work focuses on redistricting, voting rights, and elections.
There has been a tremendous growth in reform efforts around the country in the last few years. And in 2018, five states passed some form of reform for November, and Ohio passed a version of reform earlier in May. And you've seen that momentum carry forward really into this year. New Hampshire, the legislature just passed a reform on a bipartisan basis. In Virginia, a reform passed on a bipartisan basis. So there definitely is a lot of movement toward reform. Now, the reforms look very different. It's not one size fits all, and a lot of them are very tailored to the states. But there is a recognition that, you know, there's a lot that's broken about the way that we draw maps, in particular leaving everything in the hands of legislatures. And when legislatures are controlled by one party, that's just an invitation to, the temptation seems to prove too great, and people go to town and they end up in creating these really skewed maps and deeply undemocratic maps.
Is there any commonality that we can look at for the states who have done some reform? Do they tend to be red states, blue states? Do these tend to be people-driven efforts? Are these politicians, brave politicians, who are stepping up? Are there any common links?
Well, it really is a mixed bag. You certainly have had reforms in states that would be characterized as blue, like California, but you've also had reforms in purple states like Ohio and Michigan. In Ohio, it was a legislative effort that passed and then was approved by the people. And when it went to the voters in May of 2018, it was approved by supermajority margins in every single Ohio congressional district. So in other words, Republican districts voted for it, Democratic districts voted for it. It was hugely popular. In no district did it get less than 66% of the vote, and some districts it got close to 80% of the vote. And similarly, in Virginia, you saw a reform pass on a bipartisan basis almost overwhelmingly in the legislature. And so, it's not just blue states that are doing it, and it's not just citizen initiatives like in Michigan where this is happening. Sometimes lawmakers actually are doing it on their own. I think because people understand that this is increasingly seen by voters as a problem, I think lawmakers themselves recognize that, hey, you know, our system isn't perfect. Maybe we could do a little bit better. Maybe we could make sure that more people are at the table. And that's not too much to ask, right? I mean, because these reforms aren't about ultimately changing Texas from a red state to a blue state, right? Texas has been a Republican state. It probably will continue to lean Republican. It's just about having a fairer process where politics doesn't dominate everything.
Redistricting, a lot of people see it as red versus blue, but many times it's more about rural versus urban.
It can be, I would throw in there also, communities of color oftentimes get targeted, whether it's for racially discriminatory reasons or because it's a convenient way to create a partisan gerrymander, right? And likewise in the urban-rural, oftentimes you have rural areas joined to urban areas, like in the Texas 10th, which runs from Austin to Houston, right? I mean, there's a big rural swath of that's in the middle of that, but the two big population centers are in the Austin area and then in the Houston area. And when you have these sort of very mixed districts, it's not clear that anybody really gets the kind of representation that they want, right? As opposed to when you keep communities together, when you have people who share common needs and have common representational needs, then they tend to elect somebody who better reflects that. So an example in California is that they drew a district that kept a lot of the foothills in Los Angeles together, and these are very different communities, but they were joined together because the people went to the commission and testified that we have a problem with wildfires and nobody's really paying attention to us because we're only a small part of, a number of districts. If we're in one district, we can get somebody who will be elected and pay attention to wildfires. And in fact, that happened when the district was created. Both Democrats and Republicans campaigned on the basis of what they were going to do for fire safety and fire prevention. And that doesn't happen when you sort of you combine urban-rural areas or suburbs with urban areas necessarily in unnatural ways, because then nobody really gets the representation that they need, and it's a struggle for lawmakers as well.
I can't help think about Travis County and about how Travis County has been cracked into six different congressional districts.
That's right. I mean, Travis County is a great example of, political gerrymandering, right? And also a great example of splitting apart a natural community of interest, because when you're in Austin, it feels very different. It feels like a unique place that probably has and you can love Austin, you can hate it, but it feels like a unique place. And splitting the 11th largest city in the country into six different congressional districts, such that none of them are anchored in Austin, just destroys that natural community of interest. It means that there's nobody who really sort of has primary responsibility for representing Austin on its many unique needs, ranging from transportation to the fact that the University of Texas at Austin is there and has funding needs and things like that. No one is the congressman for all of those needs. And that's something that was done, as you said, for political purposes. And it really has helped contribute to the fact that Texas has one of those biased maps this decade.
And having these maps drawn in a way where you have safe districts, candidates campaign to the extremes, and we're not listening to the middle of the citizens.
There is no question that a lot of voices get drowned out. And that really it's sort of the primary in many places that matter. And, there's some great examples in Republican districts where, if you look at where the most of the population lives, and you look at polling, the people are not nearly as conservative as the member. But because the district is just outside of the reach of Democrats, they tend not to get a top-tier candidate. That top-tier candidate tends not to really sort of be able to run, like, really competitive races. And as a result, the primary is what matters, and you get sort of people who pander to the primary electorate. And that is a problem because, although the American people have polarized some over time, the group that is polarized more than the people as a whole are the primary electorates of both parties, and especially the Republican Party. And so they have really moved far apart from each other, and you're getting more and more sort of the extremes that matter on both sides, but especially the Republican side. And that's sort of left the bulk of people sort of stranded in the middle.
Michael Lee serves as the senior counsel for the Brenham Center's Democracy Program, where his work focuses on redistricting, voting rights, and elections. Texas is one of nine states that picks district court judges with partisan elections, and Texas is one of six states that selects the justices on the Supreme Court and appellate courts, also with partisan elections. It's almost universally agreed that there are better ways to pick a judge, but what method could work better for Texas? The lawmakers in the current legislative session could take a big step forward in figuring that out.
Do solemnly swear.
January 1st at the Bexar County Courthouse, and there were a lot of fresh faces in brand new black robes. It was swearing-in day for the judges who won in the November midterm election, and the majority of them were Democrats. Remember that blue wave? It was a tsunami for the Bexar County judicial races. Democratic candidates won 22 contested district and county court elections. And it wasn't just in Bexar. In Harris County, 59 Republican judges were unseated. Texas also elects its higher courts, and 19 incumbent Republican appellate judges lost their seats, resulting in the flipping of four major state appeals courts. This signals how Texas politics is changing, but this isn't a story about shifting demographics and partisan branding. This is about why those judges were on the ballot to begin with.
I think that it's among the worst systems for selecting judges. It focuses on the wrong factors, and we could do much, much better.
Vincent R. Johnson is a professor at St. Mary's University School of Law. He says the quality of judges is vital for having a fair judicial system. But elections don't always put quality judges on the bench.
Judicial selection is the heart of having a fair justice system. If good judges are not selected, if they're not retained, the system is not going to do good work.
Texas Supreme Court Chief Justice Nathan Hecht agrees. He has long called for ending electing judges, despite the fact that he's won many judicial elections himself as a Republican.
Six times, more than anybody in history to this court.
Hecht says it isn't just a problem of wave elections arbitrarily sweeping talented and experienced judges from either party from the bench. One solution to that is raise the standard to be a judge. Currently, all it takes is a law license. Trial experience is not required. Hecht also points to the mere appearance of a judge campaigning, which means raising money frequently from lawyers. He feels that undermines the credibility of the judicial system.
Political election of judges requires them to raise money. There's just no other viable way to do it, and it stinks to high heaven.
San Antonio State Representative Steve Allison, a Republican, has filed a bill that calls for a study to assess alternative ways to select trial and appellate judges. He says it's asking a lot of voters to know enough about judges to make an informed decision on Election Day.
We saw it this last election cycle that it was just a determination clearly just based on party affiliation. And I think that's just a bad situation if that's the sole criteria.
The system that 34 states use and is considered the gold standard is called the Missouri Plan. Adopted in Missouri in 1940, it has five key elements, including the creation of a nominating commission. They create a list of well-qualified candidates. Then a governor or some authority makes an appointment. And then the appointing judge serves a short time period before facing a retention election. Professor Johnson.
It's not a partisan election. It's simply a question of whether or not the judge will be kept on the bench. If the judge is approved for retention, then the judge serves the normal term of office.
Allison's bill only seeks to authorize a study about alternatives to partisan elections for judges. So if his bill is passed, it would be another legislative session before lawmakers could draft a constitutional amendment with the fixes. And then that would have to be voted on in a general election, likely in November 2021. So the way Texas picks its judges, it might be one of the worst ways to do it, but Texas is going to be stuck with it for some time to come. David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us wherever you get those podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.